Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around for a breakdown of the day's top stories at the end of this episode. If you've ever wondered why some developments in Chicago move forward while others seem to stall, well, a fair amount of that comes down to one key gatekeeper inside City Hall, the chair of the City Council's Zoning Committee. For months, that gate was essentially closed. A political deadlock froze nearly 100 projects across the city. But now there's finally someone new in charge. At the table, 36th Ward Alderman Gilbert Villegas, who is the new Zoning Committee chair. We'll hear about what he plans to do with this new role, his top priorities, and how he plans to tackle the city's affordable housing crisis. I started our conversation with asking him why he wanted this position. Here he is.
I've been in the construction industry the majority of my professional life. I was a deputy director with the Illinois Department of Transportation. I was an associate director at a not-for-profit trade association that advocated for infrastructure investments in D.C. as well as in Springfield.
Okay.
And then I also was the chief of staff at what's called the Capital Development Board, which is the construction management arm for the state of Illinois, where we oversaw all of the vertical construction projects in the state of Illinois. So this is something that's been very dear and near to me as it relates to getting things built and making sure that we're getting built in a timely fashion.
Yeah, and I want to make sure our listeners fully understand the scope here because, you know, for some people who don't follow City Hall closely, they would be surprised to learn what I just shared about the zoning chair holding so many cards, right? So what would you say, Alderman, people should know about how your job affects their daily lives? And maybe give us some examples that we can already see around the city.
Absolutely. So when you think of zoning and land use, it's the ability to take a look at investors that are looking to invest in this great city of ours, whether it's a single-family home all the way to high-rises in the city of Chicago. We're going to be working closely with our colleagues to figure out ways to get it done quicker. We're going to be talking to the outside folks that have to build things, developers, attorneys, mm-hmm. as well as the internal departments that have the opportunity, have the responsibility of actually putting forward the agenda to get things done and figuring out how to get things done. So that's what we're looking forward to, is really having this conversation to figure out how to streamline the process and get some predictability for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that the bureaucrats internally want to see or is required by ordinance? And then the outside, the developers and the attorneys, what it is they need to prepare in order to enter the system so that way we can have a quick process to getting projects done. We've seen that as you talk about affordability, one
yes.
of the reasons why affordability is it takes a long time to get things built in the city. When you take a look at some of our peer cities, whether it's Los Angeles, New York, Texas, and Austin, Texas, Atlanta, you see that they're building projects a lot quicker.
With you in the chair, can we get things done quicker?
Oh, we're going to get things done quicker because my colleagues want that as well. And as we're talking about the budget, we need to get new revenue in the form of new construction built. And so the more that we can capture in this year, we'll be able to capture that for our budget. So that's something that, again, we're going to look at. And this is the perfect department to overlay technology on.
Mm.
This department is full of paperwork. And I think that there's a great opportunity to overlay technology so that way there's more transparency. There's dashboards that
are you talking about AI?
Well, am I talking about AI? I think I'm talking about technology in general.
Okay.
Right? I mean, the fact that you have all this paperwork there lends it up for an opportunity to have technology.
So zoning chairs, I mean, they've typically, in the past, they've been allies of the sitting mayor. But you have been a frequent critic of Mayor Brandon Johnson. You were one of the alders who worked against his budget and corporate head tax. So how do you foresee that relationship going forward while you're in this new position?
Well, I think the mayor and I have a similar agenda. We want to see this city grow. We want to see this city succeed. And so wherever there's alignment, we're going to be allies. And so I think we're going to have a conversation today to kind of figure out what his vision is. I'm going to lay out my vision and try to find out where there's alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, whenever the city council is independent, it's good. You want to have the days of the rubber stamp being gone. And so those robust discussions that take place, it's okay to have that. And I think it's business wins, taxpayers win when there's that friction there, because then we end up with a better product.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just one person, whether it's the city council or the mayor, putting forward an agenda, it forces those discussions in order to force compromise.
I asked the mayor about this during our monthly Ask the Mayor interview last week. Here's what he had to say.
I've worked with them already. It's the reason why we have the 1901 project on the west side of Chicago, an $8 billion development. The Psi Quantum on the southeast side of Chicago, a $20 billion operation. We're building a brand new football stadium for our Chicago Fire. That is a multi-billion dollar development. Here's what's most important. I'm committed to building the safest, most affordable big city in America. I do not have to agree with someone 100% of the time in order for us to build a city that works for everyone.
So what are your thoughts on what he had to say about working together and the projects that he mentioned? Is he right to cite those as wins?
Well, I think, listen, anytime you have these huge scale developments in the city, that's good for the city, right? Because it brings new tax revenue, brings employment opportunities, brings contractual opportunities for large contractors, minority women-owned, veteran-owned contractors. It's a good thing. So as the mayor stated, whenever there's an opportunity to work together, we should. This is not personal. This is making sure that the same way the mayor was elected with his vision, I was elected with my vision. And we got to figure out how to compromise. Mm-hmm. And again, as I stated before, when you have an independent body and the mayor trying to figure out how to land the plane, it's good for everybody.
What happens next with that backlog of construction projects that were held up? As I said, it was about 100.
Yeah.
It's a lot to get through.
Well, you know, let me put this PSA out for my colleagues. These meetings are going to be very long this next coming month. We would have one meeting scheduled for May 6th and another one for May 19th. Usually we meet once a month, but in this case here, given the backlog, we're going to meet twice in May. And there'll probably be about 5 or 6 hour meetings. And so we want to make sure that we're getting these projects up and running. People have been waiting. You know, unfortunately, we're not like California or Florida where they enjoy year-round decent weather. Mm-hmm. We know that our construction season begins late March up until late November. And so we have that window of opportunity to get things done. And so we want to get these projects approved so that way folks can go ahead and start the construction industry.
Yeah, long meetings. And then we're going to get to work, right?
No, we're already at work. The meeting's already set.
Good.
And we've already begun speaking with some of my colleagues that have projects in the queue. To let them know that, begin those discussions again because we're ready to go. We want to make sure that we're hitting the ground running.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing right now.
Something that the mayor didn't mention there in that clip. What is the latest on the massive proposed development between Lincoln Park and Bucktown? Lincoln Yards.
The Foundry. The Foundry. That's the name of the project. It's called The Foundry. So
okay.
It's been approved already. And so what we're doing is they're already proceeding with their construction project. So it's going to be a great project for the city. It's going to create a lot of new revenue. There'll be affordability on site, 20%. 10% of that will go to veterans, something that I advocated for. So it's going to be a good project. We have a lot of minority women-owned veteran businesses that are participating.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a great job creator.
Yeah. Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. What does the chair of the zoning committee do? Why is this position so powerful? We're sitting down with the man who's been named the new permanent chair to lead the powerful zoning committee. That is Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward. So let's talk more about affordable housing and affordability, because it is, we can't ignore it. It's getting more and more expensive to live in the city of Chicago. So what are you going to do to ensure that there are more homes in the city that people can actually afford?
Yeah. Well, it's supply and demand. I keep pointing to Austin because what we've seen is Austin has overbuilt. And as a result of that, prices for affordability, they've come down. And so that's what we want, is we want to make sure that there's more units being built, which in essence creates more competition. And so what we want to do is get a meeting both internally and externally with all the stakeholders to figure out how we can do that. And again, as I stated, we're going to overlay technology over that because we want to make sure that we're getting projects approved quicker.
Speed up the paperwork process.
Eliminate paper. In 2026, let's get rid of paper. Let's use dashboards. Let's make sure that we're incorporating technology to the best of our ability. I think that, and then also making sure that people are going to invest here. I think when you take a look at the predictability around property taxes, that's why I'm going to be working with the new assessor when he comes in, part of his transition team, to figure out ways that we can get some predictability out there to those that want to invest. Listen, when you talk to people that want to invest in the city, especially like the venture capitalists and private equity that are funding some of these infrastructure projects and building projects throughout the country, they pause when you talk about Chicago because of the fact that property taxes are unpredictable and the process to get projects completed mm-hmm. take a long time. So if we can begin to address that, I think we'll see additional investments. Now imagine, this is all these investments that the mayor talked about are despite the fact that we have some of these issues. Imagine if we're able to fix these issues. We'll
what is your assessment of the administration's efforts on affordable housing so far?
Well, I think that everyone wants to get affordable housing, and that's why we've been able to make sure that we're approving these projects with the 20%, and then in some cases challenging the developers to take a look at increasing those numbers, whether it's through LIHTC, which is a low-income housing tax credit, whether it's through the housing equity development bond that was passed by the city council. There's huge opportunities there, but again, it's about getting projects completed so mm-hmm. that way they can get on the market, and that's what we've seen right now. There's a lot of bureaucracy, some cases taking months and sometimes over a year.
Last week you said you wanted to, quote, truly cut the red tape.
Well, and that's the thing. We have to cut the red tape and let the bureaucrats know that while we're cutting the red tape, you can't be adding duct tape to another portion of a policy. We've got to figure out how to streamline the process so that way, again, we can get things built quicker, increase the supply, so that way we can lower some of the prices around affordable housing and just mm-hmm. market rate as well.
The zoning committee is also where the concept of aldermanic prerogative plays out. And that's what essentially allows alders to veto or stop any kind of development or zoning in their wards, including what we're talking about, affordable housing units. What's your take on this longstanding tradition in the council?
Yeah, so we're gonna have some serious discussions with our colleagues and take a look at data. I look forward to talking with Metropolitan Planning Council as well as CMAP as well to kind of figure out what their take is.
Do you want to reform aldermanic prerogative?
What I want to do is have discussions with some of those policymakers, have discussions with my colleagues to figure out from a data perspective what's the best way to move forward. Listen, someone's going to make the decision, whether it's going to be your local elected official, whether it's going to be a bureaucrat downtown. When we talk about approval, it's going to be done at some place. And so the question is, who do you want making this approval? And so I think if we can talk to our colleagues about what the landscape looks like and begin to take a look at getting projects done quicker, I think we'll be able to get our colleagues comfortable with making sure that we're putting projects a lot quicker.
So back to that large backlog of development projects, you've said that you're going to have several meetings coming up. You may hold two of them ahead of the next full city council meeting in May. That backlog, what's the realistic timeline, Alderman, that you think it'll take to kind of work through that nearly 100 projects?
Yeah, so my intention and my goal is to try to get through at least, of the roughly 100, at least 80 or 90 of them in the next month. Those that may have entered a little later through that process where there weren't any meetings may have to wait an additional month, but I want to take a look at those projects that were submitted early on when the zoning committee wasn't meeting. I want to take a look at getting those ready to go so that way we can get, again, people working, projects mm-hmm. up and running, get units, get buildings, get everything built.
And once you get through all of that, what will be guiding you as you make decisions as zoning chair? Like, you know, bigger picture, anything that you can share with me about where you want to take this in the future?
Yeah, I think when we take a look at some of the challenges we're facing with our budget, I see the zoning committee as an economic growth tool. So again, we can get projects done quicker. That means that we can realize revenue. That means people are moving in, people are spending money. We're gonna have to grow ourselves out of this economy. It's gonna be a balance of how we get to, there's gonna be a balance on how we get to that balanced mm-hmm. budget. There's gonna be, you know, making sure that we're creating opportunities, leveraging technology, taking a look at right-sizing government, taking a look at TIF surpluses. But I think that this committee is very influential as it relates to economic development.
Yeah.
And that's what and being the former chairman of Economic Capital and Technology, I'm going to bring a lot of those things that I learned over the last 6 years into that committee, into this committee, so that way, again, we can create new revenue because we've got to grow ourselves out of this predicament that we're in.
That is Alderman Gilbert Villegas of the 36th Ward. He's also the new chair of the Zoning Committee in Chicago City Council. Alderman, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to continued discussions.
Let's turn now to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller, and WBEZ senior producer Meha Ahmed. It's Chicago, so of course we started with a chat about the weather. Here's Claire.
So there was some frost in the air, frost on many of our windshields, especially when I got into my car around 4:15. National Weather Service had a frost advisory in effect. It just wrapped up at 9. And I did see a lot of people planting some bulbs going into the ground over the weekend. So hopefully those people covered up their seedlings because the frost can do a little damage to those.
Yeah.
But highs today in the 50s, the sun's going to be out. And then we'll be back in the 70s, 77 degrees tomorrow.
I'm such a rookie. I can't even imagine gardening at a time like this, but it's all good, right?
Well, we had the nice weather, and so folks immediately started
getting excited, and set up get and happy,
and then they got bamboozled.
Then they got frosted, and then they're gonna feel redemption when we're at 77 degrees, mm-hmm. and the AC is back on tomorrow. It's the April weather swing, and it comes with the rain. We likely won't see any more rain though until potentially late tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Well, Meha, flights are being cut at Chicago's busiest airport this summer. What do we need to know?
Yeah, the FAA has moved to cap flights at O'Hare from about 3,100 to 2,700 daily flights. That's actually a really big deal. This is from mid-May to about through late October, which is, you know, arguably the busiest time at O'Hare. One of the busiest times during the year. The Department of Transportation says the goal was to reduce flight delays and manage congestion at gates. And the problem is, this is a bit of short notice, and some experts are saying this is going to be a real challenge for airlines who want to keep their passengers happy because there are some flights that are going to have to be rerouted and plans that are going to have to change.
Mm-hmm. How did the FAA determine that this new 2,700 daily flight cap? That's a very specific number.
They used a few things, but the main thing was they used last summer's flight schedule at O'Hare. So this is not that different from previous operations at O'Hare. It's just that this summer was a really pretty ambitious increase to the point where the FAA said they had to step in for safety issues and for, to prevent cancellations.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of us are already thinking of our summer plans and mm-hmm. how that's going to impact the delays. Joining us at the table, Violet Miller from the Sun-Times. Hey, Violet, good morning.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
Yes, and I'm putting you in the hot seat right away. A festival celebrating Chicago's indie music venues. It's underway. Tell us about Civil.
Yeah, so my colleague Erica Thompson stopped in. A lot of the stuff there was just resources for local musicians. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard about local independent venues struggling, but the musicians and the performers are, you know, struggling just the same. Increased gas prices are hitting touring musicians. Mm. The venue struggling means, you know, there's less places for indie musicians to play as well. So a lot of folks just getting together and talking with, again, my colleague Erica Thompson about this.
Yeah, no, it's a struggle for indie artists, to say the least, right? I feel like it's just one thing after another that just kind of hinders the upward climb that you would want to have.
And that merch is not going to sell itself.
Right.
Absolutely. And those print costs are going up too. I mean, they're getting hit from really every aspect of it. So definitely a tough time to be, an independent artist. But a lot of them are coming together. There are unions for independent artists that mm-hmm. are, you know, kind of fighting for different ways for, you know, this could be kind of worked on.
Yeah, they're hoping the city could support them, right?
Yeah, they were calling on city council to kind of create a commission that might help out with finding some solutions to help independent artists.
Yeah. Let's turn to another headline here, Claire. Most people, it turns out, who were arrested in that Operation Midway Blitz, they didn't have a criminal record.
That's correct. So we've been tracking a lot of these cases, truly case by case. You've had John Seidel on your show with updates from the courts almost every week.
Yes.
But these latest numbers are from Senator Dick Durbin's office in the Illinois congressional delegation last week. Sun-Times reporting that this is the first sort of concrete large release of arrest numbers given by federal immigration officials themselves. So we've been banging that door down as a media. And I say that as all of us, I think, across the country have been doing this. But during Midway Blitz here in Chicago, you know, federal immigration officials justified their actions by repeatedly saying, you know, we're targeting the worst of the worst, only mm-hmm. the violent, the worst criminals. But now Illinois has the data to refute that, which we've been seeing.
And also, I mean, they're claiming that they hadn't arrested no U.S. citizens either, but the evidence tells us otherwise.
Yes, according to ProPublica, at least 170 citizens.
Oh, that many.
Yes, were detained in the first 9 months of the Trump administration. As of mid-October, about two dozen U.S. citizens had been held for more than a day without being able to contact anyone at all. A Durbin staff also documented the reported detention of at least 40 citizens here in Illinois between late August and early November 2025. And we should tell you that Sarah Karp had a great story this morning.
Yes, so good.
Talking about a community that was taking action on the north side. A Rogers Park High School senior and his mom were taken into custody by federal immigration enforcement. They're out now. But in that, you know, those brief couple of, I believe it was just a couple of days, it left a pretty big impact on that community, on his soccer teammates, on his brother.
Yeah.
It's a really great audio story. You want to check it out, WBEZ.org.
Yeah, I second that. Sarah did a really good job on that piece. Another story on our radar, Violet. Late last week, tragically, I mean, you had to go to a gathering in Hyde Park, and this was at a bus stop where a teen was shot and killed. Two teens were shot. One was killed. Tell us about Eric Billups and what happened that day.
Yeah, so Eric, or King, as his family members and loved ones knew him, 16-year-old Hyde Park Academy sophomore. He loved basketball. He loved football. He was a West Side resident who specifically chose Hyde Park Academy. You know, he had wanted to go there. And in speaking with family and friends just last week, you know, they told me that he was, you know, very easygoing, very mellow, got along with everybody. And they were left with more questions than answers, you know, as police investigate. There was a shooting that, from what we have been told from police or obtained from police reports in our reporting, you know, there was a fight earlier in the day at the school between Eric and another student, who then returned and fired on Eric at the bus stop and struck another student. So again, this involving, you know, three Hyde Park Academy students.
Yeah, it's just been an incredibly tough time for that school's community because, you know, in the weeks prior, they lost two other young ladies.
Yeah,
right?
in hit-and-run incidents, one much closer and one further in suburban Dalton. But yeah, definitely
all students
a community.
Of Hyde Park Academy.
Yep, a community hard hit.
You talked to Alderman Desmond Yancey. This is his ward, the 5th ward. How is he reacting to all this tragedy?
Yeah, I mean, he was reacting the same way I think a lot of us are, where, you know, it's just this kind of confusion as to, you know, how these things can escalate to violence so quickly, especially in youth. You know, whether there's access to weapons or not, just how, you know, violence becomes an option. And so, you know, he was talking about, you know, pushing more of these kind of peace walks, peace gatherings that people have talked about. You know, it's been a method that a lot of Chicago organizers have used in the past just to try and clear up areas or you know, bring a presence.
Yeah. Hey, if you just got here, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons. That's Violet Miller from the Chicago Sun-Times. And we've got WBEZ's Claire Lane and Meha Ahmed in studio as well. We're going behind the headlines of the stories that you need to know in our area today. Meha, a bill to ban cell phones in Illinois schools. It's moving along. It's moving through Springfield. Mm-hmm. What's the latest on this?
Yeah, this is a push by Governor J.B. Pritzker to limit the use of cell phones and other smart devices in classrooms. And it passed the House, Illinois House, late Thursday. It's on its way to state Senate. And this is actually a second attempt at limiting cell use in schools in Illinois. The legislature failed to pass this law last year, so they're taking another swing at it. And, you know, not a lot of issues get bipartisan support, but this was one of them. The proposed ban wouldn't just limit cell phones, but tablets, personal laptops, gaming devices, smartwatches, Meta glasses, if the kids
all
got
of
them.
The things that the kids
but
like
keep
to
the
bring.
AI, though.
Keep the AI. Yeah, keep all the AI.
Yeah. I mean, and there are...
But Lord forbid they have a smartwatch.
You can't text on the clock.
And there would be exceptions, right? For, you know, I know some. If there are parents listening and getting a little worried, like, what if I need to reach my kid? Exceptions would be made for emergencies and for students who are caregivers or have medical needs or rely on translation services. But supporters of the bill say that this would improve student performance, reduce bullying, improve mental health outcomes. And if it's passed, it would take effect in the 2027-2028 school year.
Okay, so not this next year, but the one after. Okay, interesting. Yeah. All right, Violet, we have been following this back and forth between President Donald Trump and the Pope from right here on the South Side. I mean, and during church yesterday, I mean, local faith leaders, they were also talking about it from the pulpit. So what did they have to say?
Yeah, Father Mike Flager, you're really doubling down on comments he made last week. If you missed it, Tina Svandelis, my colleague, had a really great piece talking to local religious leaders just about the use of religious language in both justifying the war on Iran, as well as a number of other, you know, kind of operations the administration has come through with. But, you know, he was, again, just kind of chastising Trump, saying that he needed to, you know, bow his head, bend the knee to God, and also ask for forgiveness, but also saying that he's waging war on not just the Christian faith community, but the faith community at large, you know, mocking Allah and his threats towards Iran, you know, just a number of statements he's made. And so I'm just kind of pushing this narrative, but also pushing on Democrats to act and to stop him before they lose votes over this in the midterms.
And the Pope also addressed the whole debacle on Saturday. And like me, I feel like the Pope's just done.
Yeah, he was quite nonchalant about, you know, saying,
I'm not
talking about anybody in particular. I'm just talking about peace at large. And then 2 days later, he said something about tyrants that are waging war, ruining the world. So
I don't know if it's just me, but that Chicago accent, that Southside accent comes out a little bit. I heard it during
it
that Saturday interview on the papal plane. I was like, who is that? Oh, it's the Pope
it's
talking.
It's the Pope from the South
but
Side of Chicago.
That's the level, I think, of him, you know, wanting to just put an end to this back and forth he's bringing out the South Side.
When you're tested, the South Side will come out.
Yes, it will.
Claire, it looks like pride flags, they're going back up at Phil's Coffee. Phil, I said, what is this story?
This was kind of an interesting story. Phil's Coffee has 6 locations in and around the Chicago area, I believe. And earlier this month, it took down its pride flags in its locations. The company then reversed course after employees were saying that, you know, this takes steps away from their sort of inclusive roots that they started out with when this company started. There was also...
But they were bought by private equity.
That's correct.
And that's where
a lot of this was coming from. Mm-hmm. But the company says in a press release, this was Friday, that the pride flags are staying up. They're going back up in some cases because I think they went down. Mm. And that's exactly what the CEO said. It was kind of a weird quote, but it's if a pride flag came down, it can be put back up. So I don't, you know, that's literally what's happening. But I think for the employees and some customers, it just goes a little bit deeper than that.
Of course.
So we'll see if their business suffers. I mean, this has just been a couple of weeks, but it is kind of an interesting story that we'll continue to watch, as we always do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other stories you're following, Claire?
Yeah, this just for me was kind of fun. I think we often forget just how old some traditions in Chicago neighborhoods really are, or even the histories of Chicago neighborhoods. They go back a ways, but the Swedish American Museum in Andersonville, that celebrated 50 years.
Wow.
Just a museum in that neighborhood over the weekend. They've got a new art exhibit. They opened that up to the public, which spotlights longstanding traditions of weaving in Scandinavian culture. But the museum continues to say, and this is true, that Andersonville has been one of the most concentrated areas of Swedish heritage across the country, roots going back to the 19th century.
Wow.
That's on my to-do list. I haven't been there yet, but
it's pretty low-key, but then you can always get some glog or get a Swiss roll somewhere in the neighborhood. There's always cool stuff to do in Andersonville.
Speaking of historic events and things, we're a couple weeks away from Cinco de Mayo, Meha, but the celebrations here in Chicago are going to be low-key again.
Yeah, unfortunately, for the second year in a row, Chicago's annual Cinco de Mayo parade has been canceled in Little Village. It usually runs down Cermak Road. And the Cermak Road Chamber of Commerce and Casa Puebla says that this is all due just to the ongoing uncertainty and fear from increased immigration enforcement. You know, the community is just still too fearful to come out to such a public event.
What a shame.
Yeah, and... Mm-mm. You know, the chamber president, Hector Escobar, said there is nothing to celebrate, but, you know, is hopeful conditions will improve in the future. But, you know, this is more than just canceling a parade. This is expected to have, like, a real major economic impact on the neighborhood.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, and potentially costing local businesses $5 to $6 million in lost revenue. And that's that's $5-6 million is nothing to sneeze at. But
Cinco de Mayo is a moneymaker.
Yeah, and for Little Village, this is a really big deal, but so these decisions are not made lightly.
Mm-hmm. For the second year in a row, after a year of, businesses have been struggling everywhere between tariffs and everything else, these, you know, businesses are struggling under this added weight. I can't imagine what it's like.
Yeah.
What else are you following, Violet?
Well, the Sox aren't the worst team in baseball.
Yes.
that would be the Mets, who I have enjoyed watching. I've been watching a lot of baseball, so I think that's big, just to see, how these teams develop as the season goes on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to keep it light today, so I'll stick to baseball.
Nice. But
yeah, very, very fun watching that recently.
I love that. Violet Miller is with the Chicago Sun-Times and WBEZ's Claire Lane and Meha Ahmed.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Meha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.